A man is indicted for smuggling greenhouse gases. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The seven states in the Colorado River Basin have been unable to agree on a plan to manage the river's water as long-term drought and climate change shrink available supplies.
The three states in the lower basin, California, Arizona, and Nevada, disagree with Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico in the upper basin on the way mandatory cutbacks should be triggered and then allocated between the two groups.
The lower basin states proposed that the trigger for cutbacks would be low water levels at the major reservoirs on the river, not just the two largest, Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Then, cutbacks would be shared 50-50 by the two basins.
The upper basin states contend, however, that because they depend on snowpack for water, they can't leave more in the river if there's less snow. Amy Ostick of the Colorado Water Conservation Board said at a media briefing, "We don't know how much water we're going to have each year. We can't make promises we can't keep."
Each of the two basins sent separate proposals to the Bureau of Reclamation, which plans to issue new rules for management of the river by the end of this year. Although there is no consensus yet, all involved are hopeful that an agreement can be reached.
Coral reefs that have become degraded by human activity and climate change can be restored fast in just 4 years, according to new research.
Scientists led by the University of Exeter planted new coral in what used to be some of the most diverse, colorful, and vibrant reefs in the world that had been devastated by fishing practices that used dynamite about 30 years ago.
They attached healthy coral fragments to sand-covered steel frames sitting on damaged reefs off the coast of an Indonesian island. The researchers described that the frames, called reef stars, support new coral growth, provide habitat for marine animals, and stabilize loose rubble.
In just a year, the fragments developed into coral colonies, and after 2 years had branched with neighboring colonies, and in four had overgrown the structures. The restoration sites were almost indistinguishable from healthy reefs.
This good news comes as the Great Barrier Reef off Australia is undergoing a mass bleaching event for the fifth time in 8 years. Warming ocean waters cause the coral to expel the algae that gives them nutrients and color.
Ocean temperatures reached record highs in February, with the average global sea surface warmth nearly 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
A man was arrested at the U.S.-Mexico border last week on suspicion of smuggling not drugs or weapons, but greenhouse gases with the intent to sell them for profit.
According to the Department of Justice indictment, 58-year-old Michael Hart of San Diego is alleged to have purchased refrigerants in Mexico, concealed them under a tarp and tools in his vehicle, and posted the greenhouse gases for sale online.
An example of so-called green-collar crime, this is the first such prosecution in the United States stemming from a 2020 law that prohibits the import of hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, commonly used in air conditioning, insulation, and refrigeration without EPA authorization.
HFCs can be hundreds to thousands of times more potent than carbon dioxide. They've been increasingly sold on the black market as a substitute for ozone-depleting chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, that were banned by the Montreal Protocol in 1987.
Hart pleaded not guilty to the charges, which carry potential prison sentences ranging from 5 to 20 years and fines of up to $750,000. And finally, perhaps as you listen this week, you're a bit bleary-eyed from springing forward to daylight saving time. If the clock-changing ritual bugs you, you can partly blame a guy who was looking for bugs.
George Vernon Hudson was an entomologist living in New Zealand in the late 1800s who from a young age loved insects. He even published a paper about them in a British journal when he was only 13.
But there weren't enough bright hours in the day for his pastime of studying and illustrating his beloved bugs. So when he joined the Wellington Philosophical Society in 1885 and ultimately became its president, he proposed a seasonal time adjustment to reduce the need for artificial light and allow people like him more leisure time after work in nature.
The suggestion was ridiculed at first in New Zealand, but ultimately gained acceptance and led to a trial run in 1927. Other countries, including the U.S., had used the idea to conserve power during the two world wars. The concept then went dark for several decades in the U.S. until Congress made it permanent in the 1960s.
While perhaps famous for initiating daylight saving time, Hudson is best known for the vast number of insect illustrations he produced and specimens he collected, which are now housed in New Zealand's National Museum.
Were he alive today, he might say that time is of the essence. At least one of the moths he identified nearly 100 years ago is believed to be extinct.
Support for This Week in Water comes from Keep It Colorado, which partners with conservation groups statewide to create a Colorado where people, lands, water, and wildlife thrive. Learn more at keepitco.org.